news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House of Representatives is not in session on Thursday. Instead, they adjourned Wednesday night due to a warning by security officials that an unnamed militant group was plotting to breach the Capitol. Sound familiar? Right-wing extremists reportedly had been circulating credible threats of violence timed to what they call, quote, true inauguration day, March 4th, when they believe that former President Donald Trump, who lost the November election to President Biden, will be sworn in for a second term. The House Sergeant at Arms, Timothy Blodgett, said in a memo to lawmakers that the Capitol Police, quote, had enhanced their security posture to counter the threat. Authorities also reportedly have extended the assignment of a special security detail for the House's Democratic impeachment managers, the members who argued the case against Trump for incitement of insurrection. Congressman Michael McCaul, the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, says Donald Trump has a duty to call off any supporters planning action on Thursday. Yeah, that's unlikely to happen. Even more so, as we're now learning about how things actually unfolded on January 6th. 3 hours and 19 minutes. 3 hours and 19 minutes. That's how long it took the Pentagon to agree to dispatch troops to help overwhelmed Capitol Police overrun by the violent pro-Trump mob. On Wednesday, in a Senate hearing on the events of January 6th, we heard astounding testimony from the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard. Major General William Walker gave the details that his first call for backup was made at 1:49 in the afternoon, but he didn't get approval until 5:08 p.m. Yep, 3 hours and 19 minutes later.
Of as many available National Guardsmen that I could muster. Immediately after that 1:49 call, I alerted the U.S. Army senior leadership of the request. The approval for Chief Sun's request would eventually come from the Acting Secretary of Defense and be relayed to me by Army senior leaders at 5:08 p.m., about 3 hours and 19 minutes later. I had already had guardsmen on buses at the Armory ready to move to the Capitol. The Secretary of the Army's January 5th letter to me withheld that authority for me to employ a quick reaction force. I found that requirement to be unusual. I have 39 years in the National Guard. I was in the Florida Guard, Hurricane Andrew. I've been involved in civil disturbances. So I believe that number could have made a difference. We could have helped extend the perimeter and help push back the crowd.
Despite a lot of testimony so far, there's been a complete absence of any explanation as to why the Department of Defense refused to send help for over 3 hours.
They got back to me saying, and that was on the phone call with District of Columbia senior leaders, that it wouldn't be their best military advice to send uniformed guardsmen to the Capitol because they didn't like the optics. And they had also said that they thought it could inflame.
No, optics is not a reasonable explanation. Still likely suffering from some post-traumatic stress, the House finished up their business Wednesday night to flee the Capitol so as not to be there should another attack be staged. But before they left, they passed some key legislation. The For the People Act, a top legislative priority for both chambers of Congress, the bill includes a slew of ballot access, campaign finance, and ethics reforms that came under renewed scrutiny after 4 years of Trump. The law contains provisions that would weaken restrictive state voter ID laws that critics say unfairly burden some minority and immigrant voters. It would mandate automatic voter registration and expand early and mail-in voting. If passed by the Senate and signed by the president, the legislation would amount to the biggest expansion of federal voting protections since the 1960s. This as Democrats counter efforts by Republican-controlled statehouses to impose new voting restrictions. Of course, all the Republicans voted against the bill, as did one Democrat. Congressman Benny Thompson of Mississippi voted no, raising concerns that the independent redistricting mandate would mean the elimination of some majority-minority districts in Republican states. And of course, opposition by Republicans appears certain to stall the bill in the Senate, where Democrats do not have the 60 votes needed to beat a Republican filibuster. The House on Wednesday also passed another measure, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. It's a huge policing overhaul measure named for the 46-year-old black man who died last Memorial Day after a Minneapolis police officer held his knee on Floyd's neck for almost 10 minutes. By the way, that police officer, Derek Chauvin, goes on trial in Minneapolis for murder on Monday. But back to the bill. The final vote tally was 220 to 212 along party lines. But two Democrats, Jared Golden of Maine and Ron Kind of Wisconsin, voted against it. There was one Republican vote in favor of the legislation. Representative Lance Gooden of Texas accidentally hit the wrong button. After the vote, Gooden tweeted that he had pressed the wrong button and had meant to vote no. He said he would submit a correction to his vote. Okay. Despite the House adjourning early out of an overabundance of caution, the Senate, aware of the warnings, remains in session on Thursday. Democrats were still scrambling Wednesday night to put their final touches on the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill that the entire caucus will have to support. President Biden on Wednesday agreed to a compromise with moderate Democrats to narrow the income eligibility for the next round of $1,400 stimulus checks. The new proposal will completely cut off families that earn more than $160,000 a year and individuals who earn more than $80,000 a year. Still, you know, Republicans will be Republicans, and they are threatening to slow the whole thing down again. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has said he will force the bill to be read aloud by Senate clerks. That reading alone could take 10 hours.
I don't want to sound like a leftist, but I'm going to resist. Okay, so the first way I'm going to resist is I'm going to go down and object to the waiving of the reading of the bill. I will make them read their 600 to 700 page bill.
Hey, Wisconsin voters, do something about Ron Johnson, please. So this happened on Wednesday.
I think it's a big mistake. These masks make a difference. The last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it. It still matters. It's critical, 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 critical that they follow the science.
Neanderthal thinking. That's what President Biden called the decision by Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the others who followed his lead in reopening everything in the state at 100% and rescinding the mask mandate. Dr. Anthony Fauci called the decision inexplicable. So yesterday, we got an inspector general's report alerting us to some behavior by former White House physician Dr. Ronnie Jackson. Now comes another newly released report, this one from the Department of Transportation Inspector General's files, and it aims squarely at former Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. You might also know Ms. Chao as Mrs. Mitch McConnell. The report cited Chao for four kinds of ethics violations, including planning to bring relatives on an official trip to China and requiring DOT's public affairs staff to help market a book that her father wrote. It also found she had employees handling personal errands, such as shipping Christmas ornaments. Some of the inspector general's conclusions back up reporting by Politico and the New York Times on the deep entanglement of Chao's family with her work at the agency. Investigators from the IG's office referred their findings to the Justice Department U.S. Attorney's Office and its Public Integrity Section in December, but both offices declined to open criminal investigations. Stay tuned. And sounding as if he were on the verge of tears, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Wednesday did something New Yorkers have rarely, if ever, seen before. He apologized.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it. I feel awful about it, and frankly, I am embarrassed by it.
In his remarks on Wednesday, Mr. Cuomo sought to differentiate his conduct from some more abhorrent behavior that has emerged in the Me Too movement, insisting twice that he never, quote, touched anyone inappropriately. Okay. Well, New York's Attorney General Letitia James is leading a new investigation. I got the- And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.